Hello, hello. This is Tooth Be Told. This is Dr. Walter Acca.
And you know who this is? It's Leroy Horton.
So we're just jumping on here to kind of talk about an important topic that you and I actually got into today. And I said, let's just get on the mics here and just talk about it, you know. And the one big thing is, do you believe that dentists and I should say new grads and young dentists were kind of sold a bill of goods, basically a bunch of lies about what to expect when they were to graduate. And you have a very interesting viewpoint now that you're kind of in academics, and I wanted to kind of get your input on this whole situation.
Yeah, man. You know, it's like you grow up and everyone says, oh, you should be a doctor, dentist, lawyer, right? And then patients, and I think patients are the prime example of what people think, even as they're going into dental school. Patients think we are all rich. We're all millionaire dentists. When they cut a check, it goes directly into our pocket and, towards our yacht fund and our sports car fund, which we know is the furthest from the truth, right? And so a lot of times when people go into being a dentist, what does your family say? Oh my gosh, you're gonna make so much money, you're gonna be so secure. So you have that going into it. The schools are trying to generate your business. They want you to apply. They want you to come to dental school so you can pay your exorbitant tuition, right? So what do they say? Oh, we're gonna set you up with a profession. It's one of the top professions, every year in the country. Top one of the top earners. They do overpromise you. And no one really says this is a real job. You will have to find work. It may not be where you want it to be. It may not be how you want it to be. It may be a number of years before you are actually a high earner that's actually good at their job, right? I mean, we always joke, but it's called practice. Like, it takes time to get good. And so, yeah, I think going into it, to just answer the first part of your question, students are sold a bill of goods, both from the community, out of just kind of appearances and layperson knowledge, but also institutions that really just want to rope you in to, keep the institution alive, have you paying your tuition. And it's sad. It's a disservice to everybody. As we keep talking about this, listeners will see why. It's not all roses and treats when you get into any industry.
Well, okay, so let's just break that down. So you're right. You have your family side, you have the dental schools that are trying to get you to apply and get you to come in, right? But then you have another side. Oh, I'm sorry, Instagram also. Basically, people on Instagram wanna, put out this image of success and look at my Bentley and my Lambo and everything else. But here's one thing that I don't understand. If you open the University of dot dot dot's dental school, they tell you how much tuition you're going to be paying. And then if you go to the American Dental Association, they tell you what the average dentist makes. Now, I get it. Whenever you're going through school, everybody tells you how special you are because you're so smart. You are the top, 1% in this class. You are so amazing. I can guarantee you when LeBron was going through high school, they say you are amazing. And he believed it, right? And then you got kids who are number one, five star, and they believe it. The funny thing is when they get to college, they're still maybe five star and they're doing well, but they're playing against more five stars. So you're not that special. You went from high school where you were special. Now you're okay. People that transition to be extraordinary are the people that continue that fight, continue to play that five star rank, like against other five stars. Right. And so when you get to that next level and now you make it into the NFL or the NBA, you are elite. You are to that level. Now, if I had a son or daughter that was really good in high school, I would not be saying, look at LeBron and look at his life. Because the chances of you laugh. The chances of you getting to
I
that
agree.
level is so minute that you might as well just play the lottery. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but that's the truth. You got thousands of kids that play basketball each year, and you got maybe 10, 100 of them that make it into the NBA each year. You got thousands upon thousands that played in NFL. And then you got hundreds, technically 199, 200 maybe, 199, that make it into the NFL as, on draft, right? So I'm not
With an
saying
average
don't,
career of 3 years.
in the average career, 3 years. So I would not be sitting here looking on Instagram for any kind of truth, because everybody is going to sell you lies. People lie. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, I'm going to tell you something that you're going to take away for the rest of your life.
Oh, dirty secrets. We're airing them out, y'all.
Ready?
They're not the secrets.
Ready? People lie. I promise you, when you were a child and people said to you Santa existed, they lied.
They lied.
When they said the tooth fairy exists, they lied. And I'm whispering this because I got my kids around. I need that lie to continue. I need that lie to continue because I'm not going to. I want you, this is the parental advice. Please do not listen to this while your kid is in the room. I will not be responsible for ruining anybody's childhood. I refuse. But people lie. If something is too good to be true, they're absolutely lying to you. Wendy's, when a lot of dentists, and this is for our listeners that are not dentists, when you're in school and you're about to leave, you have corporations that come in and they want your business. They want to take you on as their dentist. And Dr. Leroy, what do they say to you when they're trying to recruit you?
Oh, they sound just like the military recruiters used to sound in high school. Where do you want to work? You get to pick. How much you want to make? You get to control that. What hours you want to work? You get to create that schedule. They promise you the world to get you to sign on that dotted line.
And then when you do, what happens, honestly?
Oh, honestly, everyone that I know that has signed with a corporation, they get hit with a brick in the face of the reality brick that it's you're probably not going to make as much money as you thought. You may have to work somewhere where you weren't hoping to be working at. You may not control your hours. You may have to commute. And guess what? As with any other profession, it's going to be a 3 year grind before you're good at what you do and you've developed a consistent patient base to where you're making predictable income over time with predictable, procedures on your plate over time. Like, it's a grind.
So,
And you either can handle it or, I've had some friends where they call me and they're distraught, this isn't what I thought. And like, okay, we try to tell you, but what happens? Well, when someone comes to you and says, "Hey, you know what? I've been told from multiple sources I'll be able to make $500,000 a year, and I'll be gangbusters from the get-go, and they have all these clinics." When you try to tell them to re the reality of it, what type of reception do you get
oh,
to them?
you're a hater. You're lying. This isn't right. That's not true. I know the person personally. They've taken me on their BMW, R8, or I that's the first thing I thought because I figured that's pretty impressive. I'm not a car guy, so forgive me. I would say Porsche, but I keep using that
I
example.
would have believed you. I know nothing about
I
cars,
don't.
so
See, you're like me. I
I
don't get excited about cars all like that, to be honest with you. If you told me you went on a trip to another country, I'd be like, oh, you gotta tell me more about that. That's impressive. You're impressing me now, so I'm that wrong guy. When you go on Instagram and you show me your car, I go, good for you. That just looks like a waste of money, but okay, nice. No, but I mean, they tell you, people don't want to believe the truth. And here's a personal story for me. When I got out of dental school, and this was in 09. They were telling me this in 05 when I went into dental school. They were like, listen, you guys came in at the best time. This is the golden year of dentistry, golden era of dentistry. We're doing Invisaligns, we're doing implants, we're doing cosmetics. Everybody wants their teeth white and straight and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, man, I am so lucky. I'm so happy to be here. And everybody's telling me all this. Fast forward, fast forward, fast forward. You go through all the misery, but you're like, I see, I'm almost done. This is going to be great. I see the end. And then 09 comes and I'm looking for a job and I can't find not a single thing. I can't find anything that I thought I was going to look for. I can't find anybody that wants to hire because the dentists are not retiring. And this is another thing with dentistry. I want people to understand this. Any small little recession, I promise you, nobody in dentistry wants to retire. Why? Because most dentists don't live below their means. I'm saying this again. I'm going to get hateful here. Most dentists don't live below their means. If you were actually even were to look at most dentists, and tell me if I'm wrong, most dentists usually live paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. Tell me if I'm
I mean,
wrong.
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
If they're not working, they're not making money. Most dental offices are not businesses. Most dental offices are only businesses if that main dentist is there. So when anything happens, like the 08, 09 housing recession or house calamity, I like to call it, dentists stop. I'm not retiring. I can't afford to retire. My 401k or my investments are all down to the whatever. So they're not retiring. So you got a new guy coming out, and I can't find a job. But you know who did have jobs for me? Come on now. You know exactly. Corporations.
Operations.
We hate corporations.
ESOs.
We hate corporations. But guess who had jobs for me? Corporations. We can't say we hate something, but that they them be the best part when things are down. Do you know why corporations? You laugh, bro. No, I'm serious. I'm actually irritated today. It could be the flu that I'm coming over. It could be the fever I had recently. But you know what I can't stand? I can't stand when people hate on something, but then try to be like that. Most dentists hate corporations, but they look to corporations on how to run their business. I'm sorry, their jobs, their offices.
They
I'm not
want
gonna
to
call
be
it.
a corporation.
They want to.
And here's a question for you. Has dentistry gone astray with the, I guess, the injection of this notion of passive income within the world of dentistry?
Most dentists are not financially intelligent enough to know what real passive income is. If you spend your money buying stuff that does not make you money, that's not passive income. If you think your office is a passive income and you have to work there, that's not passive income. Let me go ahead and give you a quick definition. And if you want, I can look it up on Webster's dictionary if that makes it official for everybody. But passive income versus active income. Passive means I don't do anything and I get paid. Active, I have to actively do something in order to get paid. And I'm being facetious here and I'm trying to be a jerk for a reason because we don't understand. Most dentists don't understand finance. They don't understand P&Ls. They don't understand money. It took me a very long time to read a lot of books and stuff like that. And I purposely put these books up there to make myself look smarter. But I we joke, but you have to understand the full picture here. No dentist that works in an office, you can't consider your office passive income. Even if you have one or two associates, if you're still working there, that's not passive income. You know, Steve Thorne, the guy from Heartland, I forgot what his name is. The people that create big DSOs, they have passive income because you dentists are working for them. They don't have to work. They could be on their yachts, chilling, because they've set up something where they don't have to work and they're still multimillionaires. Heck, even billionaires. But you guys have to work. If you think that you are partnered up with a company and you're still in that office, that's not passive income. You're a worker. I get it. You own a piece of the bill. You own a piece of the property. You own a piece of the company. But I own a piece. I own a piece of. I own a piece of Apple. I own a piece of Facebook. You know what that's called? It's called stocks. If you really want to. Don't work as a dentist. Go invest in stocks. At least I'm
Right.
not working at Facebook. I'm not
Right.
working at Apple. But I
Yeah.
know that I'm getting paid by Apple and paid by Facebook. So if they do well, I do well.
Right.
Let me
You
sit back
know, I
because I think
think
my fever is coming back.
right. I'm getting all hot and bothered right now.
It's annoying.
You know, I think, for instance, what a lot of people don't understand it, if I do buy an office, it's an investment almost like a house would be an investment. I have to work it for 20 years, 10 years to pay off because the standard business loan is 10 years, 10 years to pay off the business loan, say another 10 to 15 years to start kind of recouping and building some savings with now that extra income that's no longer going to the bank. Then when I'm ready to retire, whatever the value is, I can sell that, and that's my retirement, right? That's kind of the traditional model of the dental office. However, now with corporations, people are starting to have been saying for a while now, well, I want to operate like a, multi-level corporation as well. I want to have multiple practices. One thing that they don't understand, both associates don't understand and future potential owners. If I have a doctor, let's say my profit margin is 50%, right? If I'm working, the overhead is 50%. But now I hire somebody to do my job and I'm paying them 30, 35%, right? And I'm not working because I'm trying to rely on passive income. Most of us cannot live on that small leftover percentage after we pay a high earner to do what we would be doing. So the only way to actually make money off being, a business owner is to scale it. Now, if I have 10 offices and I'm making 10% off each office, now you know how much I'm making? Maybe a little more than I would have been making if I would have just been working myself. And you could say, oh, but it's passive. But guess what? You're a doctor. You're on the hook as far as liability goes for 10 offices. So when you have a recession, the debt you took out to service these 10 offices, I mean, unless you just come for money, which I didn't, so I speak from the perspective of someone that's got to
We're going
take
to
out,
assume that they're normal.
right, normal people. A recession happens, people quit, a pandemic happens, and you have to shut down. You're liable for the debt, you're liable for the malpractice, you're liable for the potential discrimination lawsuits, because anytime doctor on let's say office eight screws up, who's going to be named on the lawsuit? That doctor, the business entity, and all the business owners. So you're still going to face a lawsuit even if you didn't touch the patient, right? So I really wish people would understand going into this that there's no, you're not going to walk in to be a dentist or a periodontist or a neural surgeon, and magically one day you get all this money thrown at you. Right? That's just not how it works. And there's high risk when you take on larger endeavors, but it's not passive. Even when someone else is working for you, it's active. You have to actively manage, actively oversee, actively build systems, and people don't realize that. They just think dentists just make a ton of money, and I wish it was true, because I'm a dentist.
I
I want
want to
money.
make
I
a
like
lot of
money.
money. I don't even like boats, but I would like a boat.
I would like a
I
boat.
would like a boat, Let me ask you a question. A lot of dentists are going through burnout. We talk about this all the time, right? They're going through burnout. And I want to get your input on why dentists are going through burnout. Okay. Now I want to list some facts for you and tell me if I'm wrong with any of these, right? The ADA now says that most dentists average about 190,000. Okay. And I want people to understand that they're talking about the dentist that just came out that works for somebody and the dentist that has owned a practice for a very long time. That average is 190. Okay. So you'll have somebody that makes 90, and then you'll have somebody that makes like 300. Okay. I want to remember that's the average. Now I want everybody to remember the average. Okay.
And someone lower, someone's making a
And
hundred.
someone's making, yes, right?
Someone's making a
Lower,
hundred.
right? So I want you guys to remember that. And then I want to ask you, most I mean one most dentists usually work 4 days a week, 4 days a week. And I say average. I say
Average, yeah.
average, okay? Because I know people that work 3 and 2, and I know people that work 5 and 6. Some of them work 7. I know a dentist in the LA area that works 7 days a week, okay? 7 days a week. And you're saying, wow, but he is very big on, social media. He wants to expand that reach. He basically is on call for all his, clienteles. I'm going to call them their celebrity clientele. So he works 7 days a week.
Okay.
Okay. So there are people that range within that boundary. So I'm asking you, burnout, what do you think is the reason for burnout? And then do you think the dentists are selfish and greedy when it comes to how much they make? Because remember, the average person in the US makes 50,000 a year. So we're already making the top 10% of earners. Yet they say, oh, woe is me. I don't make enough because my student loan is expensive and I have to pay my student loans. Now, again, I say this not to be mean, but I say this before you apply to that school, the school tells you how much you're going to owe. So why are we surprised?
Well, let's
Burn,
reverse that.
let's yeah, I asked you multiple things. Let's start out with the burnout situation. Why do you think people are burned out?
I think because there's such a low grade constant stress in our job. We're constantly multitasking. You're focused on a procedure that you're doing, that you're battling a patient's tongue, saliva, movement, anatomy, so forth. You're trying to manage what your assistant is doing. You're also thinking about the next patient, the previous patient, the staffing. There's just a lot that you're constantly multitasking. There's this low grade constant stress as a dentist. You're also, it's physically ta taxing because you're in like this isometric position for hours at a time that, sometimes it's hard to be ergonomically correct given patient, I had a patient today who couldn't lay back all the way because they get vertigo. So, I have to be like this, right? And so there's just so much going on physically and mentally that I feel like if you work hard enough, long enough, there's a burnout that happens for most people. Some people have the temperament to go hard 7 days a week, God bless them. Some people don't and are smart enough to just not, right? Other people have obligations because, you touched on the tuition part. For example, you could sit here and say everyone that got trapped up in the housing crisis completely their own personal responsibility. You knew an adjustable rate was not a good idea, but you bought it anyway. However, you had a professional sitting down that was a licensed broker, licensed real estate agent, telling you, assuring you, the market's going up. You get the adjustable rate, you'll refinance in 2 years, you get a lower fixed rate. So we do rely in our society and in many industries on expert opinion and expert expression. Maybe too much, right?
No. I mean, I hear you. I like that. Go ahead.
And there is personal accountability. But I feel like there's industrial accountability that has to be said too, because every school, they don't paint the picture as, oh, so you want to be a dentist, huh? Okay, you want to make $190,000 a year? Do you want to pay $3,000 a month in student loans? Do you want to have to wait until you're in your late 20s, early 30s to start a family? To you want to be a broke, poor student until you're almost 30 years old, while all your other friends who went into the trades, like plumbers and longshoremen, they're making 100, 150 grand plus at 20 years old? Like, no one ever presents it to you like that.
That might be the way you should do it. You should have a, if dentistry was true, like YouTube.
And so I can see where, and plus at 20, what are you? You're very idealistic. You go into medicine, a lot of us, especially first geners, people that came from either, meager beginnings or we want to contribute and help save society. And so they play on that. And so they tell you the romantic stuff. Oh, it's dental school. It's gonna be the best times of your life, the best relationships you'll ever forge. And then you'll have this license to help people, make people smile. All stuff that is true, but it's just this one side of it. And I think I put more, just as a doctor, if I help a patient, I believe this is what's best for you. They're going to put a lot of weight on that because I'm the expert. They still technically would have a duty to research themselves, but they're going to be like, well, this, my doctor, my expert said this.
That's true.
Who am I to argue with that? And who am I to doubt that? And I feel that's why there's always a larger responsibility on the professional part of that equation. Who's the professional that said this was the best idea ever? They get 80% of the responsibility.
Okay. Well, here's the
And
next thing. Here's the next question. Do you think that people that get burned out are the younger crowd now or the older dentist? Who do you think gets burned out more frequently?
that's a good question.
And the re okay, let me tell you a quick story before you do that. And I know you work at the VA, so I'm guessing I want to know if you'd notice the same thing. No, and it wasn't until I was at the VA that I noticed this. So at the VA, you get to kind of see every history. I mean, literally the whole history of the patient, medical history, everything is, ex I mean, literally right in front of you. So the patient can't tell you anything that you don't know. Okay. One thing that you also get to see is you get to see a little pattern. And I remembered when I was at the VA for my GPR, I noticed a pattern. And for my residency, I noticed a pattern that a lot of veterans, okay, and I mean this when I say veterans are amazing because they're just so funny to me. Like they're so tough. We had a blizzard and they were all there still for their appointment. They looked at me when I was running late. Like, where are you? Where were you? But so I really love them. But you know, I noticed something with veterans. I noticed that if you cut the line from Vietnam on and Vietnam before, I noticed a lot more PTSD from Vietnam on. So veterans that served in the Vietnam War on, I noticed a lot of PTSD. Veterans that were Vietnam before or before Vietnam, I noticed less PTSD on their charts. And I'm wondering, is it because they knew what they were getting themselves into versus the veterans ahead of time that just kind of says, oh, I went in there not really knowing, and then this kind of shocked me, and I fell into this. So the dentist say before, the dentist say, hey, this is gonna suck. I'm gonna have to live below my means, and I'm gonna pay this off. Versus new dentists now that go, oh, well, on social media, they're telling me this, this, and this, and they're saying I should live this lifestyle, and I know this dentist that lives this lifestyle, and they're so great. And so that idea of this is how it should be. It's what they're going off of. And then when they don't reach that, they get burnt out. Versus the previous ones that didn't have all this social media stuff, basically now going, well, no, I knew I had a debt. I knew I had to pay the debt off. I knew I had to pay my office loan off. And I knew this was going to take time. Do you see what I'm saying? So I asked you again, who has more burnout, the younger dentist or the older dentist?
That's a good question. I feel like the younger dentists have more anxiety because you're dealing with higher numbers as far as what your debt is when you do come out. And especially since the 2008 housing crisis, what a lot of dental schools did as they were hurting for money is they increased their class size. So they're pumping out more dentists, and they're not necessarily drawing from students from underserved areas that can go back to underserved areas, you know, where there would be op potentially more opportunity. And so you're getting a lot of people that are going like up here, everybody wants to live in Seattle and Bellevue. So they graduate and they stay in Seattle and Bellevue. Well, guess what? There's 50 dentists on every block in Seattle and Bellevue. So the amount of, it's almost like, I don't know if you've ever gone fishing, but we used to fish on the Puyallup River here. We call it battleground fishing. Every 2 years, the pink salmons run, and they you can get a license, and you get out in your chest waders, and you stand inside the river, and you're just snagging salmons left and right. But there's so many people. It is one of the most stressful experiences. Because everyone is vying for this same opportunity to catch fish, right? It's like every new dentist is vying for opportunities to have a job. but it's limited space, right? High
Wow.
concentration, oversaturated, and I feel like your anxiety level is extremely high because of all these pressures. Maybe
Jeez.
that's what's causing the burnout
What a
in the
great
younger ones.
analogy, bro. What a great analogy. And I'm big on analogies. So that was a great analogy.
Oh,
But the
thank you.
funny thing is, no, it's true. You know, I'll give you a props whenever you get one or two. But here's the th why don't people see it that way? If you see a bunch of salmon, like you said, if you see a lot of salmon, you're like, oh, this is where I'm gonna be. But then you look around, you see thousands of people, you know the chances of you catching multiple are very limited. You have to stand out. Maybe you come in there with like a big net or a big, like, you know, a big fishing net, and then your chances increase. But if you're doing using the same tools everybody else is, you're gonna have less opportunity. So why don't people look at it that way?
You know, I think part of it is the people I see go back to Montana or go to small town in, Pocatello, Idaho,
Right.
are people from there. In general, if mom, like for me, all my family is here in Tacoma, my wife, my kids, my in-laws, my mom, right? So it's not really that reasonable for me to say, okay, I heard there's opportunity in the middle of Missouri.
That's it.
And so that's why I feel like what would alleviate both underserved areas, but also some of the stress of these new graduates is pick students, schools, pick students from places where there are no dentists. Because guess who's likely to go back to wherever they're respectively from is people from there.
That's true. So the next question, do you think dentists are greedy with making 190,000 a year? Do you think that they're just greedy? And do you think that they should be able to live a pretty good life knowing that you are making that, you know, in the 10th percentile of earners in the US? Do you think dentists are greedy and should they sit there and stop complaining about how, you know, oh, I don't get paid enough and so forth?
I think it's relative, man. Because let's say 190 grand downtown Seattle versus 190 grand in Battleground, Washington, which is, down southern Washington, there's not a lot there. It stretches a lot further, right? When you think about how much your student loans are, your
Right.
malpractice insurance, when you think about a lot of us first geners, right? We often have to support our extended family at times. We're graduating, and this is the tough part. I kind of joked about, you're a broke student until you're 30. Well, now you graduate and you get married, you have kids, you want to get a house. You're accumulating all this like regular lifestyle debt right after graduation. Whereas
Right.
other people, if they start working at 20 or they went to, vocational training, they can accumulate that between 20 and 30. So they have this gradual build, and now you're coming out and you're trying to keep up with the Joneses and compensate for 10 years where you've been living off of your cost of living student loan money, right? And so I think there's just so many pressures. 190 is not a lot of money when you think about the cost it took to get there, the cost it takes to maintain it, so I guess I would need to see of that 190, what's the actual livable income after you pay, let's say you pay $3,000 a month in student loans,
Okay, well,
right?
let's do a quick math, and I'm
Okay.
gonna do simple math to make my life a little easier, right?
Okay.
So 190, you're looking at maybe like 18,000 pre-tax, right? Am I right? About 18,000. I'll say 18,000 pre-tax. You get tax, let's just say it drops down to 15, right? 15. Let's just say each month you're paying 3,000 for student loans.
And people need to know that you're talking about a month.
A month. I'm sorry,
Yeah,
a
yeah,
month.
yeah.
A month. So you're getting 15,000 after you pay taxes. And then each month you're paying about 3,000 for student loans. Let's just say you get a really nice house and you're paying 5,000 for that house mortgage. Okay. So you still have about 9,000, no, 8,000. Yeah. About $7,000. So that's $7,000. What are you doing with that a month?
Well,
Right? Daycare. You want to do daycare?
Oof, yeah,
Okay,
that's
let's do. You have two kids,
$1,000 a
daycare.
month.
That
Two
how much?
kids, let's say 1,600 a month.
Well, no. Give them 2,000 each, right? I
Okay.
want to kind of so 4,000.
Okay.
So you're now down to 3,000. $3,000. Let's just say your all the other expenses like electric and everything is 1,000. I'm being very, I mean, I'm really going out here. I'm really going out here. Let's just say all the bills and everything and end up being 1,000. I'm not including your car because I'm gonna assume that you're not gonna go get a $150,000 car where you have to pay like 2 or 3,000 a year.
I
If you
wanted,
live
but I
normally,
wanted that Bugatti, man.
and there it
I
is. And that's
wanted
what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to
that.
get at is the fact that like even me stretching everything out as big as I possibly can, you still have money if you just lived normally. And that's me again saying that you bought a house for 1.5 million at 5,000 a month. If you bought a normal house, you're paying 16, 1800 a month. And so that's why I'm trying to, I'm being funny, but not really. If you look at it, we're either very wasteful or we're living above our means by trying to show off. You know, by buying expensive cars, expensive houses, you're basically living house poor.
There's absolutely. I will rock with you on that.
Yeah.
In defense of people, though, to some degree, I will say that, let's say you do have kids,
Right.
and they're getting close to college age. They're high school kids now, right? If they play sports, sports is expensive. And why do we do it though? Because we want our kids to have opportunities to engage in stuff we didn't have opportunities because we were too poor
Absolutely.
to do, right?
Absolutely.
I can tell you right now,
But
for
again,
my kids,
we're
that's like
talking.
4 grand a year, 5 grand a
Right.
year just on sports.
But I'm talking about like people just coming out of school.
Okay, yeah.
We're assuming that as you progress along, you learn more and your income will grow.
Right.
I'm talking about like just the middle of the pack. You've been out 10 years and I'm guessing you're making 190. Right, because you've learned more. And here's another thing that I don't think dentistry is doing bad, really good with is a lot of dentists, and tell me if I'm wrong, and I know this from people that I know who are dentists, they've become very, very complacent and refuse to learn anymore. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely.
Right? They complain about what they get, how much they earn, but then I'm like, oh, when was the last time you took a CE on something new so you can make do that procedure? Or when can you what when you know, hey, I see that you send out a lot of implants. Have you started taking implant courses so you can maybe keep that in-house? No. Why not? Oh, I don't have time. Well, I guess but you have time to be broke. You have time to be broke, right? Because if you
Right.
don't have time to learn, you
You
have
got
time to
time
be
to
broke.
complain. Right?
You
You got
can't
time to
complain,
complain.
right? Tell me if I'm wrong. And that's another thing. No, I'm serious. Even when dentists go to CE courses, what do we spend most of, what do most dentists do when they're at CE courses?
What do you
Be
think?
honest.
Honestly, a
Do
lot of
they?
them,
Yeah, go ahead.
they're on their phone, or they're it's a vacation slash CE, so they might attend 2 of the 8 hours and still try and get the codes at the end, and then party the rest of the time. Yeah, I mean, people don't invest in themselves.
Thank
They
you.
a lot of people don't invest in
A
themselves.
lot of people don't. But the funny thing is, if you go online, you have all these dentists now selling you courses when literally you can learn a lot of this stuff either for free or through your required CE course that you have to take anyway. But yet you want to go ahead and pay somebody an exorbitant amount of money to tell you something that you should already know. You know how I knew dentists were lazy? When I was a when I was a resident and I was a Perry resident and I accidentally bumped into a course. We went to a conference and there was a course that was happening right now. And there was a very famous implantologist that you would know very well. I mean, we call him the Godfather of dentist of implants, and you know who I'm talking about. He had a course and he was teaching. And we said to the people that were, hey, we're residents, can we just listen in on this? You don't have to give us anything. We just want to listen. And we're listening to his lecture. And I turned to my friend and I go, hey, why does that sound like his book? And I was like, look at those are exactly like his book. And he's like, bro, it's because it is his book. He was lecturing exactly from his book.
Right.
And these people were paying $5,000 to have this man read his book to them.
Right.
I could have done that. Give me the money.
Right.
I would have loved to read the book to you.
Right.
But then they think, oh, wow, I can't believe that. Man, it was worth it.
Right.
That book was $200, but you spent $5,000 for multiple weekends for him to read the book to you.
Right.
How does that make sense?
People want expediency, and they want the glitz and glamour of, oh, I took a course with so and so. Now, there's a place in education for in-person learning, right? When I talk to my kids about, and my strategy during school, but what I also I impose upon my kids is read the chapter before you go to the lecture that your teacher is teaching. Why? So that you have a base knowledge in the subject and you can engage with the teacher to clear up anything that's not quite clear, to get a slightly more in tune, in-depth understanding. But don't just show up if there's information you could have gotten beforehand, because you're not going to be able to hear, listen, integrate, and learn all at the same time. But people want to be taught, they don't want to teach themselves.
Say that
And I
again. Say
feel
that
like
again. That was good. Say that again.
people want to be taught, but they don't want to teach themselves.
That's it.
And I feel like to be a good learner, you have to be able to do both. You have to be able to invest in your own self-driven, self-motivated study, but then you also have to be educated, because it's going to be stuff that you don't have the context to understand in a new procedure, new technology, new protocols, that you need the in-person experience to show you and talk you through.
Do you think, and I want to kind of get your opinion on this, do you think that patients know how little most of the dentists know about what they're actually doing? Like, for example, when somebody comes in and says, oh, I want all veneers, I want all my teeth done perfectly, and those dentists do it, most dentists, do you think that they actually know what it takes to, do you think that they know the knowledge to do that procedure? Versus the ones that actually do the procedure. Does that make sense? So, the people that do the procedure, out of those people, how many do you think actually know the knowledge to do that procedure?
It's a great question. I would say most people that do most things
In dentistry.
in dentistry are not as knowledgeable as we would hope them to be in that. And I've been guilty of that at times. You just learned something, so you're trying to practice it. So obviously you kind of knew there's always more that you could have known. I think that there's a lot of people that are lazy. And I'll give you an example.
Now you
You
sound like
know how
me.
to, as a restorative dentist, you know how to cut one crown, a single crown. Is cutting a single crown the same as doing eight crowns? Or are you thinking, oh, it's just cutting a single crown eight times, and that's as far as I need to think? I don't have to think about occlusion, temporization, proper impressions to after we prep to make sure that we can articulate and relate these,
Let
what
me
kind of.
break it down. Let me break that down, because some people may not know what you just said.
Right.
When he says occlusion, he's talking about your bite.
Right.
If you cut a tooth down, now you're changing people's bites. So they have to be smart enough to get you back to that bite, that natural bite, that neutral bite that will not cause trauma, because your body will always try to adjust for it. Okay, when he talks about taking impressions, he's saying after you cut that teeth down, you have to basically take something that's going to show the lab who's going to make your crown what to do. And if you don't do it properly, the lab is going to make what they get. And you might not have crowns that are closed all the way. You may not have crowns that are shaped properly. You may not have crowns that look right. Okay. And these are caps, right? So you have to know that. There's so many different steps that you have to know in order to get the final result to look really good. And a lot of people don't know that. Continue.
No, there's instructions you got to give the lab on how to design this new bite or this new replicated bite. Do you want the bite coming off the canines when you're moving side to side? Do you want it, in group function on all your posterior teeth? Are you trying to open the bite? Was this patient's bite too small to begin with? Did they wear their teeth down and now their upper and lower jaw? Like, there's so much that goes into it.
I gotta do it
But a
again.
lot of doctors.
I gotta do it again. I gotta do it again.
Okay.
So what he just said, so what he just said was most of the time, right? Normal biting is your eye tooth or canines slide, right? And the front teeth don't really touch, the back teeth don't touch. There are times where if you wear dentures or other procedure or other prosthesis, you may say, you know what? I want all the teeth to touch and grind and slide because that's the best way to prevent the denture or teeth from popping off or whatever it may be. So we have to know that, and you have to be able to know what situation fits with what. A lot of dentists don't know that.
They don't, and
Please
they
continue.
lazily assume that doing eight is the same as doing one 8 times,
Come on,
and
man.
that's not that. That goes with almost everything
Come
in
on,
dentistry.
man.
The
Come
bigger the
on.
scale of what you're doing, the larger the breadth of knowledge and planning you have to do to make that work. It's not simply one plus one 8 times. It's an exponential growth of complexity that happens when you do that. But I do feel that people want to get from being a single crown dentist to this full mouth aesthetic dentist without the work. That's why I applaud when I see people that are demonstrating their work, but I also see within that the history of their training, the history of their evolution to how they got there. Like if you just graduated and you're doing full mouth reconstructions, I worry. And that's not even to denigrate anybody. I worry about you, about the patients, about what you may have convinced yourself that you're doing. I wasn't ready for full mouth, and I was pretty good when I graduated. Most dentists, before you can legitimately say you're confident at full mouth, you have to have a restorative history. I would say at least 5 to 7 years with also CE training for full mouth in that meantime.
That's it. That's it. And we could go on forever, and I don't want to. Maybe we can do a part two because I get riled up very easily when it comes. No, I really do, and I do that not because I want everybody to think dentists are horrible or whatever. I just want us to do better. I've said this multiple times. I want us to do better because we're not doing better. Technology is getting better. You have open AI. That basically has this new program. I hope you saw this, where all you have to do is now type what you want and it'll make a video slash movie for you. If dentists want to have their
Scary.
job, if dentists want to keep their job, you have to stand out. You
You do.
have to be better than what somebody can just look up.
You do. And let me give you a quick example before we sign off. I had a patient today, and this is what the one thing I've learned after, 14, 15 years of practice is every patient, you have to have a basic checklist, whether it's in your mind or a physical checklist that you go through before you start treating. I had a patient show up, big infection, swelling, didn't have a thorough health history, didn't have a full set of x-rays, full set of charting. I'm talking to the patient, and there's a couple cues that you learn over time. Patient is overweight, okay? Patient has a large tongue, holds a lot of weight in their neck, right? We're taking out 2 teeth because there is a large infection, but there's a couple things that I notice. High blood pressure, right? High BMI, distribution of weight in the neck area. They had prescribed him Halcyon, so he was slightly sedated. So as he's like in his most relaxed state, you can kind of hear him, a light snoring. And you shake his shoulder like, "Hey, you feeling okay?" Yeah, but you can tell that there's obstruction, right? So one of the things that I did is I talked to his wife and I say, is before we actually gave him the sedative, but he had this big infection. So we had to do treatment today. We couldn't pawn it off for a different day. I said, "Listen, I need a thorough health history. When's the last time he's been to the medical doctor?" "My husband doesn't go to the doctor." I'm like, "Okay." Well, the previous dentist had seen this patient, no blood pressure, no health history. Of course, he doesn't go to the doctor, so there's nothing on the health history, no medications. And I said, okay, you know what? Let's get these teeth out because you got a big infection. We're going to put you in antibiotics as well. However, I want to do a few things. I talked to the wife. I was like, you hear that obstructed breathing? High chance he has sleep apnea, right? She said she has noticed that. We have a glucometer. So I check his blood sugar. He hadn't eaten in like 4 hours. His blood sugar is 120. So that's like the higher end of pre-diabetic to diabetic for a fasting blood sugar. High blood pressure, high BMI. I said, ma'am, you have to take your husband to the doctor. We got this infection out of the way, but this could be the difference between your husband living his full life capacity or dying 15, 20 years before his time because this metabolic syndrome, this sleep apnea is not taken care of. We do, after we get him numb, we do probings. We've got uncontrolled periodontal disease. We have, multiple carious needs. Before, as a dentist, what makes you good and what will keep you ahead of AI is your ability to be a comprehensive diagnostician with your patients. But what happens? Patients come in, they need treatment. We tie that treatment to a dollar sign, and we skip all these steps that benefit the patient. Right? Now is the same thing. I just graduated. I moved to full mouth. I just graduated. I'm doing all on X, working for, a DSO. If you want to be better than AI, you have to show a consistent dedication to attention to detail and gradually building up your skill so that at every moment, no one can say AI is better than you. At most, they might say AI is maybe just as good,
Right.
but they'll never be able to say they're better than you because you put the work in and you got your attention to detail. And I think as dentists, maybe it's the business model. We're seeing so many patients. We don't have time to be that thorough, but we have to be able to dedicate ourselves to our craft at that capacity to be able to be good, to earn money, and to serve our patients.
Can I just jump on what you talked about with this patient, just kind of give our listeners a reason why you were concerned? And just if you don't mind, when you have sleep apnea, you stop breathing for a certain amount of time. That over time can cause high blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure already, you're making it worse. This patient had uncontrolled periodontal disease, chronic infection. He had pre-diabetic conditions, we'll call it. Chronic infection. Put those two together, and you're basically at a level of just uncontrolled everything. Your blood pressure is not right. You have chronic infection, so your body's fighting all the time. You're leading yourself to having different parts of your legs, limbs, and cut off because you're not getting blood circulation to these places. Right? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
So he never mentioned any of this, but that's what we think about.
Right.
If you're good, you think about all these things. You may not sit there and say, "Oh, okay, now, Mr. Smith, I'm thinking about this, 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 and that." We have 10 different things. Like when you were telling your story, I literally was going through this checklist. Like, oh God.
Yep.
So now we got this. Now we have this. Now. And I want people to understand. I'm not trying to be like, "Oh, I'm smarter than everybody," but this is something that happens because we deal with this. Hence the reason why, if anything happens in your office, you should be able to do what? Control the situation. If your doctor panics when something happens in that office, run out of that office because that means they don't know what they're doing. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you know why they on airplanes they always go, "Is there a doctor in the house?" Because they know that that doctor is going to do what? Be calm in a hectic situation. And that's what we're asking you guys to do is to think, be calm, and analyze. Yes, AI may be able to analyze a lot of stuff, but we are training the AI to take our job. So be extra, be above the norm, and you'll have your job still. That's it.
And analyze everything. So going back to where we started the
Yeah.
conversation, if you're going to school, analyze all parts of what it entails going to school. If you're coming out and you're, do I go DSO, private practice, by my own? Analyze. Talk to people that have done it, that have no vested interest in selling you anything regarding your decision. And when they tell you negative stuff, like you said, don't look at them and just say you're a hater.
That's it.
When I tell people the truth, whether it's about owning a business or going into dentistry or starting implants, I tell them the rough, raw, and rugged because I want them to avoid hitting the head on the same walls that I hit.
That's it.
You
That's it.
know?
Here's something. Do you believe that there is a special dental school where if you get in, you are all of a sudden going to become rich, like a Wharton's business school? You know how like Wharton is like the number one business school in America, and you know people will go to that school and recruit like hedge fund leaders and so forth, right? We know that. That's something that is like, you know, if you go to Stanford, you'll have a lot of like IT guys and Facebook and, you know, all those guys. They're coming out of there. So they basically want to go back to that. Do we have the same thing for dentistry? I'm talking about just working. I'm not talking about research or anything. I'm just talking about just
Just
working.
work. No.
Nope, we don't. We
No.
don't. There is no number one dental school in the world. There is no number one dental school for research is different. Research. There are schools that stand out big
Oh, there's
time.
Michigan,
Right.
there's Harvard,
That's
there's
it.
University of
They
Washington as
stand
far as
out.
research goes, yeah.
Yes, they stand out for research. That's it. If somebody tells you, I went to the number one dental school, tell them, Dr. Akis said you're full of sh. No, seriously. And then tell them where to find me and then repeat, play this video to them that I said, and I'm gonna look right in the camera, Dr. Akis said you're full of sh. I'm being honest, bro. Tell me
But
if I'm wrong.
wouldn't that be dope though if a school could develop an identity for making rock star
That'd
clinicians?
be awesome.
You graduate and you've done 300 crowns before you leave here. You've done 500 extractions, high quality. Like we are a clinically, you know, the most progressive clinical 4 years of your
But
life.
see, that wouldn't
You
take
never
four.
see
I don't
that.
think that would take 4 years, though. I think that would take like 5 or 6.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that would take 5 or 6. And most people don't want to extend the time. I think that would take 5 or 6. I really do. To get that kind of level, because one, you have to teach them stuff, you know, didactically first. So you have to teach them the books. And then from there, you have to implement and apply the books. And that's the second half of the world. And you know, some people still don't know how to apply the books. And they're your dentist, by the way. Hey, shade is being, I don't care. I could care less. Anyway, man. Hey, look, I'm gonna let you go, brother. This was
Yes,
fun as
sir.
always. Let's
Always.
connect and we'll go from there, man. All right.
Sounds good, brother. All
All right,
right.
thank you for listening to this episode of Tooth Be Told. The opinions on this episode are just that, our opinions. Please consult your dental professional before taking any action with your dental health. If you have any questions about anything you heard on this episode, please contact us at Real Dentist with an S. That's REAL Dentist with an S at gmail.com. We would be very happy to return any message that we receive because we love the communication that we have with our listeners.